how the shutdown threatens security clearances. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore in for David Brancaccio, who's on assignment. Imagine you are a federal worker. You're not getting paid because of the shutdown and you fall behind on some bills. Maybe your credit score suffers. Well, turns out a hit to your credit score could affect your security clearance, which you might need to do your job. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall Genzer explains.
In Washington, security clearances are like gold. You need them for certain jobs, if you're an FBI agent, for example, like Tom O'Connor. He's also president of the FBI Agents Association. He says some agents are falling behind on bills, and that's a problem.
Security clearances could become jeopardized by failure to make payments on credit cards, student loans.
O'Connor says you're considered a security risk if you have financial problems. The thinking is you'd be more likely to sell government secrets if you're desperate for money. Daniel Dufresne is getting lots of calls about this. He's a lawyer specializing in security clearances at the firm Tully Rinke. He's telling clients, try to work out payment plans with your creditors.
The key is to get ahead of it. Don't wait until you get that notice where you're 60 days behind.
Dufresne says the government will be less likely to take security clearances away from federal workers who are proactive and pay what they can during the shutdown. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall Genzer for Marketplace.
Let's do the numbers. The FTSE in London is up 1.25%. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are up in the 4-6 tenths% range, with the Dow future up 133 points. The 10-year Treasury yield is at 2.70%. People have been protesting in Zimbabwe for the past week after the government announced a fuel price hike of more than 150%. Zimbabwean police and army have detained people indiscriminately, according to reports, and have blocked the internet. Authorities say three people have died. Human rights groups say the death count is much higher. The BBC's Pumza Filani is in neighboring Johannesburg.
In some areas, people are trying to get supplies such as food in the few shops that are opened, and they're trying to stock up on petrol, which, of course, is at the heart of what the unrest that we've seen in Zimbabwe is about. A fuel hike that was announced by the president, which has gone up by more than double, is at the heart of why Zimbabweans are upset and have taken to the streets and have protested. As we speak, the internet has been cut off in Zimbabwe overnight. One of the largest providers, Econet, was issued with yet another directive to shut down the internet, and people are seeing this as an indication of a government that does not want to be openly criticized, and it doesn't want to have people use social media as a means of communicating and showing their dissatisfaction with what is currently happening. And that has really soured things for a lot of people who were hopeful, including human rights groups, who were hopeful that last year's elections in July were an indication that Zimbabwe had finally turned a corner.
The BBC's Pumza Filani. You might have thought that trade was all about companies making their goods where the labor is cheapest. Well, not so, according to a McKinsey Global Institute report. Exploiting low-cost labor accounts for just 20% of global trade, and that share is shrinking every year. The whole global trading system is evolving, it argues. Trade in goods, where developing lower-wage economies might have had an advantage, is being outpaced by trade in services, where advanced economies have the upper hand. Finally, trade isn't as central a part of the global economy as it once was. Susan Lund is head of the McKinsey Global Institute and helped write the report. Good morning, Susan.
Good morning.
So let's start off with this phenomenon that you've observed. The volume of international trade is growing, but when you look at like the total amount of things and stuff and services cranked out by the world's economies, a smaller and smaller percentage of that is traded. The share is shrinking. Why?
So the declining share of goods that are actually traded really reflects changes within China's economy and other developing countries to a lesser extent. We have a big consumer class of Chinese consumers and Indian consumers and those in other parts of the world. And that means that they're now buying more of the goods that are produced within the country. So overall, we see China, for instance, used to export 16% of the goods it produced. Well, now it exports 9%.
Now, it's easy to assume that trade means goods. You know, the orange from Spain, the bicycle from China, the blender from Germany. But that is completely ignoring services, which you suggest we should really not be ignoring.
That's right. So when we look at services trade, we see it's growing 60% faster than goods trade. And many specific types of services are actually growing 2 to 3 times as fast. So while the world is becoming less trade intensive in goods, services are exploding.
There has been a backlash against the downsides of the old trading system, which you say we are evolving away from. Does that risk interfering with the evolution of the new trading system, where services are more important than goods, skilled labor is more important than cheap labor?
Yes. What's very clear now is that while the benefits of the last chapter of globalization were widely shared, the costs were really localized in very specific communities and individuals. And we didn't do a very good job at addressing those costs. But at the same time, the irony in our research is that now is exactly the wrong time to start preventing further global trade, because countries like the United States now stand to benefit, both by exporting to those new consumers in China and the rest of the world, as well as by continuing to build on their expertise in service and high-tech industries that are now dominating global trading patterns.
Susan Lund, leader of the McKinsey Global Institute, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
Our executive producer is Nicole Childers. Our digital producer is Miguel Contreras. Our engineer is Brian Allison. And in New York, I'm Sabri Benishour with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.